You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The Mint Theater Company is dedicated to rediscovering the work of long-forgotten playwrights. Several years ago, they began the Teresa Devi Project to showcase the work of an Irish playwright who became popular in the 1930s but then dropped out of sight. After producing three of her full-length plays, the Mint is now performing an evening of her short works under the title The Suitcase Under the Bed. Its run at the Beckett Theater on West 42nd Street has just been extended until September 30th, and I'm delighted to welcome the director of this production, the Mint's artistic director, Jonathan Bank, back to our show to tell us what was in that suitcase. Who was Teresa Devi, and where was she from?
Well, Teresa is from Waterford, Ireland, and she has this amazing story, which makes her a great collaborator for me.
She lost her hearing when she was in college?
That's correct.
Then I would have thought the last thing somebody under those circumstances would do would be to write plays.
Exactly. But she had in mind that she wanted to be a teacher, and then she felt that as a deaf woman she would not be able to pursue that line. And her family, she had Meniere's disease, which ran in the family. She had an older sister with the same disease who also lost her hearing. So the family had a routine. They sent her to London to live with her sister and to study lip reading. And as a means of practice, she went to the theater. And so she'd take the script, she'd sit down close, and that experience was transformative for her, and she decided, you know, she found her calling while she was practicing her lip reading.
And then she had her plays produced by Dublin's Abbey Theatre, the legendary Abbey Theatre. It must have been difficult to get them to just even pay attention to somebody like her.
Right. It took her about 5 years of rejection before they finally accepted one of her plays. And Lennox Robinson, who was a playwright that we have produced at the Mint earlier and was one of the directors of the theater, took an interest in her and gave her a lot of advice and counsel.
And then they put on six of her plays in the 1930s.
Six of her plays in 6 years.
And at the time, wasn't she considered to be on a par with J.M. Singh and Sean O'Casey?
Yes. For example, when the Abbey Theater toured to New York in 1937, she was one of the four playwrights included.
So why did they suddenly stop producing her work after those six plays?
Well, there was a change of leadership at the Abbey, and Ernest Blythe came in, former director of finance in the government, because the Abbey was a government institution. It was a, you know, state-supported theater, and he had a whole different set of priorities. And also, I think there was something about Devi's personality. She was incredibly feisty. And an example of that, one of the plays in the suitcase and in the program, The Suitcase Under the Bed, was a play called Holiday House, which in 1938, a short play that the Abbey had accepted for production. They sent her a contract. They had agreed to do it, but they hadn't specified a date. And she kept, you know, hawking them, when are you going to do my play? When are you going to do my play? When are you going to set a date? And the year option, I guess, they had lapsed, and they sent it back to her and said, we've changed our mind. And a few days later, it happened that somebody wrote a letter to the editor of the Irish Times saying, why are all of these plays being rejected by these great playwrights? And, you know, listed a handful, including Teresa Devi. It's like, what's going on at the Abbey, was the letter. And Devi immediately writes in, and her letter is printed 2 days later, saying, hey, my play was not rejected. It was accepted. And then they made evasive replies, and, you know, so she went to a public forum to complain, which was not very political.
So what did she do after they stopped producing her plays?
Well, you know, she wrote to a friend and she said, you know, I love the Abbey and the actors are wonderful, but I'm going to just have to find another way. And she started writing for the radio.
She couldn't lip read the way they were doing it on the radio.
Look, the way I like to think of this is that when the radio was a piece of furniture in the house, it didn't even exist when she lost her hearing, you know. And so the idea that she could conceive of writing sound only is remarkable.
How did you discover her work?
Well, I was interested in the fact that I could not think of a single Irish female playwright after Lady Gregory. And then and I say after Lady Gregory because she was a hugely significant figure, standing shoulder to shoulder with Yeats at the start of the Abbey Theater. So I said, there must be some. And I just took out a chronology of all of the plays that had been produced at the Abbey in 50 years, and I looked for the names of women.
Are her plays well-known in Ireland today?
No. To the extent that they are, it's because of the work of the Mint Theatre.
So that's the only reason that they've even been published?
Yes. There are
two books, two volumes of her plays, and these are because of what you've done?
In 1936, her best-known play, Katie Roach, was done at the Abbey and resulted in, that was published in an anthology, Famous Plays of 1936, and that resulted in a Macmillan publication of three plays, The King of Spain's Daughter, which is one of the plays in the suitcase, Katie Roach, and her one other full-length play that we have not produced called The Wild Goose.
And you've now published these books as a publication of the Mint Theater,
right.
Teresa Devey Reclaimed. I'm speaking with Jonathan Bank, who is the artistic director of the Mint Theater and also the director of these four plays that have been grouped together under the title The Suitcase Under the Bed, and that title is significant. How did you find these lesser-known short plays?
Well, when I first came across her writing, I decided that I'd heard this story that there was unpublished material at the family home in Waterford, and I wanted to see it. And I wanted to meet the family, and I had a plan to produce two of her plays, but I felt I needed to go meet the family.
And they must have been pleased that you had created the Teresa Devey Project.
Well, I think at first they thought I was crazy, and they ignored me for a while, and finally, I wrote a letter, I sent books, I sent articles, and then finally I picked up the phone and Jackie Devey said, oh, yeah, I've been meaning to get back in touch with you, but what's your story?
Were the manuscripts really being stored in a suitcase under her bed?
In the spare room, yep.
So they'd been there since she had died in 1963?
Yes.
Were you the first person who'd come there even looking for these unpublished
work? I was not the first person, and Eileen Kearney was a scholar working on a PhD in the 80s, and she was one of the first, if not the first, to begin bringing some attention. She created a breadcrumb trail that I could follow.
How many plays were in the suitcase?
Well, we've published nine there of the short plays, and then there's the three full lengths, and then there's a whole bunch of scrap. There's a half a play, and then there are various versions of plays.
In putting these together, did you look for a group of plays that not only fit together thematically, but also could be realistically produced at the Mint?
Well, I started with realistically produced, and
because they require a large cast in some cases. You have people playing more than one role.
I have seven actors playing 22 roles, and the first concern was, how am I going to fit them together just in terms of interesting combinations for actors. And then the next question was, are they going to work? How am I going to be able to come up with a physical approach, a scene design that solves all of these problems?
So you have a set that can change easily from a rooming house to a country house, then to a roadside.
Well, it's not so easy, but it's done, yes.
The program includes four plays, Strange Birth in the Cellar of My Friend, Holiday House, and The King of Spain's Daughter. Are they all being seen in the United States for the first time?
The King of Spain's Daughter has been seen here before. The other three have never been seen anywhere before. They've never been produced.
And they have a common theme, don't they? Mainly love and marriage?
Well, what...
Come as Jane Austen-ish in some odd ways.
The astounding thing about Devey's work is that across all of her plays, even though the theme is not really marriage, there's a proposal in virtually every play. So it wasn't hard to connect them.
Each play has an older woman, a younger woman, a middle-aged man, and a younger man.
That's true.
So that was something she must have thought a lot about, or...
Well, I think...
Was she also thinking about the actors who might be available at the Abbey?
She was certainly thinking about the Abbey company, and you could say, oh, that's a Rhea Mooney part, or that's a Cyril Cusack part. Yeah.
Now, during the course of the evening, we see one wedding, three marriage proposals, two breakups. Are most of the women in these plays making compromises or marrying for practical reasons rather than for love?
Well, we have some of each. We certainly have, there is one love match in the evening, and I think there is really one love match between adults in all of D.V.'s writing.
Was D.V. ever married?
No, and D.V. was, I'm not sure I'm going to get my numbers right. I think she was one of eight daughters, none of whom married.
In The King of Spain's Daughter, one woman says after a wedding, I was thinking of my marriage day when I was looking at them too. It's a thought would sadden anyone.
That's right. It's a great laugh.
She's not presenting a very rosy view of the subject. You also have entr'actes between the plays, consisting of actors reading poems that are quoted in the plays.
Well, we have the entr'actes contain the poetry that gives the names to. So, The King of Spain's Daughter is a quote from a poem, and In the Cellar of My Friend is a quote from the Spiritual Canticle of 1515.
Mention that you've just published two volumes of the plays, Teresa D.V. Reclaimed. The first was three of her full-length plays. Is your hope that other people will perform these now?
Certainly that's a hope. And the thing that is a little easier for me to impact on than what people choose to produce is what people study. So that's one of the reasons we emphasize the books.
Did you have to get permission from the family to stage the plays?
Of course.
Now, do you have any plans for them to produce some of the other plays in the future?
Well, I neither have plans nor have I decided that I'm done.
I'm wondering about whether you're running out of great forgotten playwrights from the past.
No, there's plenty of other material that isn't D.V., but what I've realized over time is that, you know, volume makes a difference. We're small, but we're persistent, and the persistence really can pay off. The timing of this production is intended to coincide with D.V. finally being produced back at the Abbey, where they're doing Katie Roach performances beginning, I think it's the 25th of August, running through the 23rd of September.
So her family doesn't have to come to New York to see the plays?
Well, they are coming to New York in September to see The Suitcase Under the Bed.
And are there still other forgotten playwrights that we'll be seeing in the future?
Absolutely. I always say that I'm really just still skimming the surface. There are far more forgotten than remembered.
Have you ever wondered why one play or one work, whether it's a novel or a play or whatever, will continue to be in the public eye and others, which might be their equals, just disappear?
Well, there isn't a reason why, and that's what makes the work so exciting, really, because there is a certain arbitrariness as to what makes, what is remembered. And sometimes it's about having a champion, and I've taken on that role for D.V. I don't know how successful I'll be in the long run, but if there isn't somebody there working the estate, it's easier to fade.
Well, I've tried to be the champion of a number of great novelists of the past, and I'll say to somebody, you really have to read James Hogg's Memoirs and Confessions of a Justified Sinner, and they'll say, okay, write it down, and then, of course, never read it.
Right.
Or Christina Stead or Tanizaki. There are a whole bunch of the Makioka sisters. These are all favorites of mine. And I think I'm sharing something wonderful by telling them that. And I'm always surprised that they haven't pursued it. Well, some do, by the way.
I'm sure some do. And you know, the fact is, and, you know, my secret, my stealth mission is to communicate the idea, to convince a handful of people that just because you haven't heard of something doesn't mean it isn't any good.
Meanwhile, people can see The Suitcase Under the Bed at the Beckett Theater on West 42nd Street until September 30th. My great thanks to Jonathan Bank for being a guest again.
Thank you for having me.